Welcome to the Chocolate Cake Bites podcast. This is a podcast where we will discuss the sweet nuggets of goodness that come from living the gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm your host, Ken Williams. The opinions, attitudes, thoughts, and ideas that we discuss are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily a reflection of the actual doctrines of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Thanks for listening and enjoy this week's conversation.
And once again, in a row, I don't even know how many weeks in a row we've been doing this. But another week in a row,
we
have Annette.
Yay.
Yeah. So there you go.
I'm actually really excited for this topic.
I am too. I was talking to my son. No, I won't say who it was. He might or might not be my son-in-law, but I was talking to Justin. We'll just call him Justin. We'll just, because that's his name. And I said, no. He had listened to last week's episode where we teased the topic for this week's episode, which is, if you weren't paying attention last week, it is, I forgot.
Wait, hold on. I have it in my text message.
Okay, good.
Something about people.
We need to stop treating people like they're expendable. Yes. And he came in. He was on fire. Yes. Yes. I agree. We need to stop treating people as expendable. And I said, do you want to be on the podcast? And he said,
no.
So I agreed that, okay, I'll just talk to Annette. And we'll deal with that. And I asked, are you sure?
No.
And so.
Wait, no, he's not sure.
I don't have any idea. I don't have any idea. He was so confused. It was Mother's Day. We were focused on other things. So anyways. So this came from, I was listening to a podcast, which I do many times. And this is Mike Rowe. And he said, oh, I thought you said micro, like not macro. No, Mike Rowe, who's the Dirty Jobs guy, and he's had some other great projects, but he's a big fan of the trades, welders and bricklayers and steelworkers and stuff like that. And so he has a foundation where he gives scholarships to people so they can learn trades, because college is not the right, it's not the right decision for everybody. And I have two kids that are college graduates, and I have two kids that opted not to go to college, and that's fine, and they're doing fine. And then I have Edison, who doesn't want us to know what's going on in his life. So I'm not going to BYU. I'm not. You guys are always talking about BYU. So he's got some other plans in mind, which is fine. But on this podcast, he had a guest who had been on the podcast before. Her name is Chloe, and she's a welder. She's in her, I think, late 20s, early 30s now. And she's been a very, very, very successful welder, like six-figure successful welder. She loves her job. And so she was on this podcast, and they're just talking about the political environment, the educational environment, the social environment seems to be pushing people into college, and they're not prepared for college. And then I have seen a lot of things on social media recently where, help me understand, why is it that I have these two degrees and I can't get a job doing anything other than answering phones in an office? Well, there are a lot of things. There's supply, demand, there's stuff like that. And employers don't pay for your degree. And to be honest, here's a little bit more social education than maybe you signed up for on this podcast. But this requirement that so many companies say that they have of having a degree for you to get a job there is only a filter. That is so they can eliminate applicants. That is all it is. Because if you have a library sciences degree, that is not going to help you be a better operations manager. But the operations manager job may say, you have to have a degree. Great. Library science, fantastic. No, they're just filtering things out. So, with that as the kind of the context, here's Chloe on the Dirty Jobs podcast. And she said, talking about how employers many times treat employees, she said, we have to stop treating people like they're expendable. I love it. I love that idea, because too many times we are. My business is helping people who have bad bosses. And many times there are bosses who treat people as expendable. I won't mention specific names, but I'm going to give Justin a shout out because we've had some really good conversations about this. But there are too many people who work for companies and the management has the attitude of, well, if they don't like it, they can leave. And so they leave. And the businesses are in more trouble than they realize they're in. So now that I've given a 5-minute and 22-second monologue on why this one sentence struck a nerve with me, I'm going to stop talking.
Dang it. Actually, you said something earlier before we started recording, and I didn't even react. I didn't even be like, ooh, that's really good. I just made a note so I could bring it right in here.
Oh, nice. I got to be careful what I say when we're not recording then.
And this time it was good.
Oh, okay.
It reflect well. You said something about there's an unwillingness to be wrong.
Yes.
And I don't even remember the context with which you said it, but I was like, that actually directly applies to treating people as they're expendable. Mm-hmm. Because if we're unwilling to consider that we might be wrong, or that whoever we're talking about has had a different lived experience than us, then we are treating them as expendable. Their life experience, their lived experience does not matter because it doesn't fit in what we believe to be right or wrong. And so much of our faith tradition, at least I feel now, and I feel like it's ramped up a little bit, at least in with what I've seen, is emphasis on knowing.
Yeah.
You know, and then you said, if they don't like it, they can just leave. I see that in our church. I see that in our faith tradition. I've heard people say,
well, if they don't like it,
you can just leave. And that is another part of just treating people as like they don't matter. And that's absolutely contrary to what we believe as the message of Jesus, having that Jesus's movement being restored on this earth and like renewed that.
That's a callback to last week, by the way. Yes. The Jesus movement.
The Jesus movement. That is where I'm like, completely rebuilding my faith tower. Mm-hmm. And that is at the foundation, the Jesus movement.
I love it. So I'm going to fill in a couple gaps, and really each of these points could be an entire podcast episode. And so as I'm diatribing, if there's anything that stands out that we need to address today, we're going to address it. And if anything stands out that we need to devote an entire episode, then we'll devote it. I think that's fun. So the context of the issue of being wrong is, so I'm a coach, and I talk to people about all sorts of things. But one of my requirements, before I agree to work with you, I ask 3 questions. And so if anybody's thinking that they might want to work with me, then you better have answers to these 3 questions. They're not hard questions, but they're difficult questions. Question number 1, are you willing to get uncomfortable? Because I'm going to ask you to do things that you aren't going to like. Number 2, are you willing to be coachable? Which means, at least for our sessions, are you going to believe that I'm right and do what I say? Because if you're not, then there's no point. There's no point. And number 3, are you willing to commit yourself, your time, your resources to becoming the version of yourself that you want to be? And the same thing on that. If you're not, then what's the point? Why, if you're not going to invest time in yourself, I don't understand why I should. So there's that. Now, the fundamental principle in how you might answer that first question, are you willing to get uncomfortable, is I'm going to suggest, and I'm not going to do this probably directly, but I'm going to poke holes in your belief. I'm going to suggest that you're wrong about something. And I need you to at least entertain the possibility that you're wrong. If you're not willing to do that, then go live on your happy life being right about everything. And I will tell you, you're not right about everything. And I'm not going to tell you what you should do or what you should believe. I'll give you suggestions, but I'm going to tell you, I'll ask questions, or I will lead you to a way of thinking about something that is different than you've thought about it before. And that, by the way, that is extremely fun for me to do. I love it. And so,
do you love to do it to people, or do you love to also have it done to you?
Now, let me tell you a story. So I had a significant decision that came up yesterday. I was talking to Mark earlier today, and I told him, I can help you make a decision in less than 5 minutes. And really, it takes less than 2 minutes. Any decision, I can help you make the decision. I'm not going to make it for you, but I'm going to ask a series of questions. And based on your answers, you will know whether the decision is right or wrong. You will know. So I had this significant decision that would impact both me and the rest of my family. So I call Marcin because I want to get her input. Unfortunately, for me, I have previously shared those four questions with her. And she said, okay, first question. And she asked me the question and I answered it. And second question, I knew where she was going. And so I answered all four questions. The decision became perfectly clear, perfectly clear. Did not make the decision. The decision was easy. It did not make following through on the decision easy. There's still this, because it's a substantial decision, there's still this heavy weight of, I hope I'm doing the right thing. But my answers made to those, it's four questions. It's not that hard. But my answers to those four questions made it crystal clear what the decision was and what I needed to do. Now, going back to being outside the comfort zone, I could ask a dozen people, what would you do in this situation? What should I do in this situation? And I'll get a variety of answers. And some people say, well, don't do it this way because. Well, don't do it this way because. Well, you should do it this way. And the problem with that is every one of them is based on their own experience. It has nothing to do with my experience. And my decision, unfortunately, in anything, I'm not talking about yesterday's decision, but anything is based on my own experience, based on what's best for me and my situation. And so once I was clear on what my ultimate goal was, the decision was simple. And then the next thing is acting on it. So how does this apply to being willing to be wrong? Number one, I'm getting into all sorts of rants that I didn't think I was going to get into, but
I love it.
Number one, as I thought about, why was I talking to my wife about this decision? Because it affects her. But I think a lot of times we're looking for permission. I was looking for her blessing. I was looking for her permission. We've talked about that in the past. And I think it went better than it would have gone if I had called her up and I said, I've decided I'm going to do this, because she might have had some resistance. But things went, they went well. Now, we talked a week or two ago about the willingness to be wrong and to reexamine our thoughts and beliefs. And, I think where this kind of all ties together is that, I said early on in the podcast series that our thoughts feel true because they come from our head. They just feel like the truth. That it's not truth. So an example is, I'm a procrastinator. It feels true because I can look at projects that I have a bathroom fan that I need to put in. I haven't done it yet. So I'm a procrastinator. But I can also find a lot of evidence that that's not true. And it's just a thought. But this is true for every one of our thoughts. They all feel true because they came from our head. And based on our own lived experience, we think that whatever we think is true. In fact, I heard something this morning. I'm going to pull this up because this was meaningful. Now, I interpreted the quote differently. So I'm not going to attribute the quote to the person that actually said it, because what I'm about to say is not what he said. We've been taught, so think about culturally, Think about in your family. Think about in school. Think about in college. Think about in church. Think about any context. We have been taught that our feelings reflect reality.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that we have to believe them.
Yes, we have been taught that.
It's not true. That is not true. Our feelings do not reflect reality. I've talked a lot.
Sorry, I'm nodding over here and I'm realizing nobody can hear me nodding. I'm not rattling enough.
So, I don't want to get too far off of our topic, but it's always fun talking to you because we always make this big circle.
We do. Well, you know, you're talking and I got a note in the mail the other day.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to bring this full circle. This is like a little off bubble. It's like a Venn diagram. I got a note, a thank you note, and I had not great feelings, thoughts about this thank you note.
Okay.
Thanking me for something that I had done. And I actually talked to one of our siblings that's, I don't know if I'm allowed to name them.
Well, it depends on which one.
And I said, I need help reframing this
letter.
And I asked him because he had gone on the journey with me as I had been working on this thing and mm-hmm. asking and looking for support.
Okay.
And so I said, I'm really struggling because of the wording. And he reframed it in a way that I was like, that's absolutely plausible that that's what this person was trying to say in their thank you note. And I felt better about it. And I think it is very uncomfortable to challenge our beliefs. Mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable to think that we might be wrong, but it's also so incredibly freeing because if we allow us to be wrong mm-hmm. about anything, then if something happens and it hurts our feelings, then we can think through that process. And we might need the help of a friend or a family member or a coach
right.
to help us get there. I've worked with coaches a lot. And so I can get there a little easier, just like baby step easier as uh-huh. opposed to, cause it's not my first, at first I was like, I wanted to rip up this card because right. it did not sit well with me. And then I was like, okay, let's take all these things into consideration. English is not this person's first language.
Okay.
So I have to allow for that, sure. right? So sitting into that discomfort of like, I don't think that she meant it to be a jab.
Mm-hmm.
I think she was sincere. Right. So I need to find a way to reinterpret this in a way that feels sincere because yeah. it didn't at first. And so being willing to be wrong in that and not discard her, right? Like, well, I don't like what you said. You hurt my feelings. I don't need you in my life. That's kind of where my brain went first. Mm. And then it was like, I don't want to feel that way about anybody. Right. And maybe partly I went there very quickly because we had already talked about this, having a conversation about this topic of treating people as expendable. And I was like, oh, yeah. I'm kind of doing that by saying, because she didn't actually do anything that would make me want to put up a boundary and not engage with her. She really didn't.
Yeah.
And so being able to set into the discomfort of maybe I was wrong about it. I read it again. I was like, okay, I was obviously having a knee jerk reaction. I need to probably reframe this. Had that conversation. And then I went, well, gosh. And so I went from like wanting to rip up this letter and never engage with this person again. Mm-hmm. Over a thank you note, like,
wow,
who that was really cool that she acknowledged the work that I had done.
Mm-hmm.
Even though at first she didn't agree, like that it needed to be done, you know, when right. we point out blind spots,
mm-hmm.
right? It could be uncomfortable for the person that didn't know that there was the blind spot there.
Yeah.
And to like, wow, that's really neat that she did that.
Mm-hmm.
That she acknowledged, you know, the work and like who doesn't want to be validated, right? A little right. pat on the back of like, we needed that and we didn't even know we needed it until you point out, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's easy to go there. You're talking about our thoughts. It's easy to go there, especially when we have a feeling. Mm-hmm. And we believe it's true. Like that person hurt my feelings. Like she's right. not, I'm pretty sure nobody gets up in the morning and says, you know what I'm going to do today? I'm going to be horrible to everybody.
Yeah.
I don't never wake up in the morning thinking I really want to hurt, insert anybody's name. I don't ever want to hurt anybody's feelings. Right. I don't ever want to be kind to anybody.
Right.
And so, but how easy it was for me to go to a place where I was willing to treat her as expendable and not even realize it. I genuinely didn't even realize it. And I'm not sure if I would have had we not been preparing for this conversation. It was interesting.
That is interesting. And I think about, I agree with you that most of us, most of the time, are doing the best that we can. And your best and my best are not the same. Right. And so sometimes your best is going to be much better than my best. And sometimes my best may be a little better than your best. And so I think that reframing is important. I want to get back to this quote that I changed the quote. What he said was that we're taught that our feelings are real. Our feelings are real. They're real and they're valid and they're there for a reason. And they're there because we had an experience. We had a thought about some thing, the note that somebody sent or whatever it is. That feeling is real. But we believe culturally, and I'm not talking just religious culture. I'm talking about every culture. I'm talking school. I'm talking about everything. We have this assumption in our culture that whatever you feel reflects reality. And that's simply not true. He's such a jerk. He cut me off. He's such a jerk because he hurt my feelings. No, he didn't hurt your feelings. He may have said something unkindly. I was shopping with Marcin, and I should not do that because there are all sorts of... I love my wife. But we were at the self-checkout, and something didn't go right. I can't remember what it was. And the woman at the self-checkout made some kind of a correction that you need to scan it this way or whatever it was. And I responded with, yeah, that's what I did. And Marcin said, come on, you can be kinder than that. And I thought, I wasn't, okay, you're right. I was being unkind, but I wasn't trying to be unkind. I was just frustrated. I was probably tired because it was towards the end of the day. So this idea that we can't be wrong, the assumption that we have that we can't be wrong because our feelings feel so true to us, our thoughts feel so right to us. We, as a byproduct, I'm bringing it back, full circle here, as a byproduct, we diminish other people's experiences. We downplay their experience. And so I follow a lot of people who have... just because of the nature of what I do, I love helping people figure out how to deal with difficult people. Super fun because it's not that hard, but you have to be wrong. That's the hard part is you have to be willing to be wrong. And, I had a guy that I worked with one time and he was not good at his job. In my opinion, I didn't have any respect for him. I thought he didn't have anybody else's, he was not a team player is the way that I thought about him. He comes in, does his job, doesn't help me out, doesn't help anybody else out. He goes home and I was talking to him after he had been moved in my group. So we were just chatting. And I discovered something. He's a real person. He's an actual human being. And he has...
Like seeing your elementary school teacher at the grocery store, you're like, what?
Mrs. Johnson, what are you doing here? I thought you lived at school.
Yep.
So when
he was a real person,
he's a real person and he had a family and hobbies and things that he liked about life and things that he didn't like about life, just like me and just like everybody else. And I started to see him differently that, yeah, it didn't change the fact that I thought, okay, I can't count on him to help me out with this, but now I had this connection with him and I wasn't afraid to reach out to him and say, hey, here's what I need. Is there any way you can help me out with that? And sometimes he could, and sometimes he couldn't. But I think understanding, may not be the right word. Maybe it's remembering that the person that we're interacting with or that we're dealing with or that we're talking about is a real human being, and they have real human feelings, and they are legitimate people, just like me, just like you. They have things that they're good at, things that they're bad at. They have things that they're right about, things that they're wrong about. Things, and maybe a better way of saying that is things that I agree with them about, things that I disagree with them about. And it is so much harder to diminish somebody when you're diminishing a real human person and not just a faceless person.
Crazy liberal or a crazy
right-wing lunatic or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. This was short. Are we done? Or do we still have more?
Yes, we could totally, we could be done or we could do more.
What more do you want to talk about? Maybe it's I've been on the soapbox for so long. I'm just feeling like, oh, okay, it's time for somebody else's soapbox.
How about that?
All right. Well, it was nice working with you. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Chocolate Cake.
Okay, no, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do that right now.
I can't wait to hear about the feedback on this one.
You're wrong. You shouldn't have done it that way. It's going to be great. And I'm just going to say, you're right.
You're right.
I don't care.
Yeah, no, I think like the mindset and the attitude of, I know we talked about this before and we're talking about it again today. It's really scary to be wrong. It feels scary.
So let's talk about that for a minute, because I think there's some value in digging into that. Why is being wrong so scary? We have two fears when we're born, and being wrong is not one of those two fears.
That's true.
So the two fears are falling and loud noises.
Loud noises. I would say falling, because like usually when you watch a baby learning how to walk, they don't mind when they fall.
I'm not talking about
the startle stumbling. Reflex.
The startle reflex, right. So if you have them and you throw them into the air, there's a startle reflex.
Yeah, startle reflex.
So I'm not going to say that I ever did any of that with my kids, but it looks super fun. for the dad here, like football. No. So every other fear that we have, every other fear is learned. Something that we learned by watching somebody else's behavior that, or hearing them talk about their experience. And so if somebody describes their experience of being wrong and the humiliation that they feel because they were treated unkindly or whatever the situation may be, think about in your own life, and I'm not talking just to you, Annette, but think about in your own life, the lessons that you got from trusted people, parents, grandparents, could be siblings, could be teachers, could be from any source, but the lessons that you gained about every fear that you have, being wrong is one of those. The lessons that you got is, and culturally, we have this idea that there's right and there's wrong. There's a right and then everything else is wrong. And we've talked a lot about that. But I think that brings in a lot of fear into our lives that going back to the decision, I can't decide because, and I don't remember if I talked on this podcast or on my other one about my decision to leave FedEx. We tell ourselves lies. And one of the lies is, I'm trying to decide when I should leave FedEx. I'm trying to decide when I should make this decision. I'm trying to decide when I should act on this. That is a lie. You're not trying to decide. You're delaying the decision. You're afraid of making the decision. You're afraid of making the commitment. I'm on a roll today. What is
that? You are. I'm here for it.
So being wrong requires that we start telling ourselves the truth. Yeah. That I'm not afraid, that I am afraid to make a decision. I'm not trying to decide. I'm not deciding, which is scary.
I don't want to get this wrong, especially when you're talking about in a religious context. I think there's more weight there, you know, of, I don't
want to. I'm going to say perceived weight. It's imagined weight.
Right. Like, because, you know, we've got like, there's the right way and there's the wrong way.
Right.
And so we look to, church leaders. We look to, you know, in our faith, in our church, we've got prophets and apostles. And sometimes we forget or choose to ignore that they're also sharing their lived experience and what worked well for them. And so when we try and apply it blanketly, is that a word? It is now.
Sure.
To us, and maybe it doesn't work, then we also get put in this place if we feel like we're wrong.
Yep.
Right? Instead of you know, exercising what most faith traditions teach, which is, you know, test the word. But there's discomfort in the unknown. You know, you plant a seed, and I love listening to parents talk about they planted a seed and their kids are like, did it grow yet? Has it come out? You know, and it's like, no, it's been 30 seconds.
Yeah, exactly.
It hasn't. But sometimes when we're testing the word, we're not giving it enough time to see what fruit it's producing before we get afraid. It didn't work. Let's try something else. That didn't work. Let's try something else. Let's even want to get it right.
So I have a daily call with my coach. It's usually just him dropping truth bombs. So
that's fun.
So I'm going to throw one out. I like this. I like it. I think it's true. I think it fits our discussion today because we've been culturally trained, school, home, church, etc. We've been culturally trained that there is a right way. There's a song. There's a right way to live and be happy.
I've been going through my head for the last 5 minutes.
So here's a, this is one of his truth bombs from today. There is no right way. There's only a better way.
I'm going to like cross stitch that and I'm going to hang it and I'm going to give one to everybody. That's what everybody's getting. Whoever I have for Christmas next year in the Williams family, they're getting that.
I have a new business and he's talking to business people in his daily calls. But he said something like, and this is true for every single context, every single context. People keep asking, what's the right way? There is no right way. There's only a better way. So choose a way and then make it better.
It's so much more freeing.
It is very freeing.
It's also terrifying.
So I remember, and go back to my January, December, over the last few years, episodes on goals. I remember when I wanted to up my game on studying scripture every day. Well, what's the right way to do that? Some people say that first thing in the morning is great. Some people say I should carve out time during the day. Some people should say I should end my day. What's right? And having the idea that there's a right way is paralyzing because what if I get it wrong? And so the answer is there is no right way. So I have tried various things. And you know what doesn't work for me? Carving out time in the middle of the day does not work for me. The end of the day, I'm so tired. The last thing I would want to do is pull up a story about David and Goliath, or that one's okay, I guess, but, and he begat somebody else. And that, no, I can't deal with that at the end of the day.
All the begats.
So what works for me is before I wake up and before I get out of bed, I read a scripture. Sometimes it's one verse, sometimes it's more than that, but I have one verse before I get out of bed. That works for me. So that is my right way. Marcine does something slightly different. She listens and sometimes it wakes me up, but usually doesn't. So that's okay. But she'll turn on general conference talks and she'll listen in the morning. That's where she gets her spiritual nourishment to start her day. There's not a right way.
And I wanted to say, like, that might change throughout your life.
Absolutely. Things have changed.
What was the right way for you then something may happen, or your dynamic, your family dynamic changes, and then something else is the right way for right. you, allowing us to let that change as our circumstances change, I think is super, super important.
So we need to allow it to change with ourselves, and we need to allow it to be different with other people. And that's where, bringing it back to people being expendable, when we assume that we have the lock on what's right, that my experience, I've seen this, and it drives wedges in families. My experience is, I'm so convinced that my experience is right, or that what I perceived as truth is the objective truth, that you have to see that I'm right. Mm-hmm. And when you die on that hill, you're going to drive wedges. I've seen.
Well, and also, like, when we rely on validation of our rightness mm-hmm. to, I don't know how to say it, like, be part of our identity.
Yeah.
Say what I mean.
Yeah. I know what you're saying, I think. So I'm going to see if I can say it in different words that maybe you'll be satisfied with.
Like an actual sentence instead of just a couple of words.
Let's just put some key words in there. No, our value is not determined by other people's agreeing with us.
Yes, that's exactly what I meant.
Okay, good. Because I could keep going on that if you want, but.
Yeah, absolutely you can. No, I was listening to a podcast and they brought up Elder Swore. I think it was Elder Swore is this conference talk from this most recent conference. I think it was him. And he said, the temple is like the pinnacle of peace. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking like, uh-oh, you know, because the temple is such a sensory nightmare for me.
Right.
I'm definitely not feeling peace.
Right.
I'm not feeling any of those things. And the person on the podcast talked about how that wasn't true for them. And they felt like they were wrong.
Yeah.
They felt like there was something inherently wrong with them.
Right.
And I think, I mean, like Kurt Franken has talked about this. I think I've probably brought it up. Like that's how Satan attacks our identity. I mean, mm-hmm. that's where Satan goes into work on us of like, there's something inherently wrong or flawed with us. And the speaker said, she related, she says, I feel the pinnacle of peace when I'm, and then wherever she said, in the mountains or whatever it was that she was doing. And she said, I reframed to like, for him, that's when he's in the temple, he's experiencing this amazing pinnacle of peace. She didn't diminish that at all. She didn't say he's wrong because that's not my experience. She says, for him, yeah. right? And we've talked about that. Like she said, for me, this is what it is. And I thought, what? That gives so much, it broadens the perspective instead of tightening up this impossible path of yeah. like, I don't want to walk around feeling like I'm broken or less than because I'm not finding other people's experience to match, you know, they don't match my own. So therefore I'm broken, or they don't match mine. So they're broken.
Right.
You know, when we're not treating people as expendable and we're accepting and validating all experiences without tying it to our worth, that's sure. what you said, I said, then.
Sure, I'll go with yeah. that. Well, there are two words that are included in many of these conversations that we forget are included. And therefore, we forget that they're included. Therefore, we believe the phrase without those two words. And those two words, I'll tell you after the break. I'm working on teasers. No, the two words are for me or for you. The yeah. temple is the pinnacle of peace for me. He is not saying the temple is the pinnacle of peace for you.
Right. Or he's not even saying the temple is the pinnacle of peace, period.
Right, right. What he's saying when we're talking about opinion, if we're not talking about fact, we're talking about those two words need to be included in that sentence, at least in our understanding. For me, you can put them at the beginning or the end. For me, Dad was an amazing man. For me, Mom is one of the most devoted wives and mothers. For me, monogamous marriage is an amazing gift. For me, because otherwise, what we say sounds like we're dropping facts, and we're not. These are all opinions. They're all opinions. And in general conference, yes, there are nuggets of gospel wisdom that can change our lives. Think celestial. For me, think celestial. And because not one of these leaders, and you could expand it to political, they political leaders doing they do the same thing. They say things that we assume they're saying, and sometimes they are saying, for you, this tax program will bless your lives. No, I don't know of any tax program that's going to bless my life, especially if you're taking more money. So that's something. And so here's where it takes time, it takes work to develop a habit. The habit that I think we need to have, and this is where we stop treating people as expendable. We assume those two words in every conversation that somebody has with us. So you're sitting down with your boss and she's giving you the performance review. You need to be more open with your coworkers. They're not saying you need to be more open with your coworkers. They're saying, for me, you need to be more open for your coworkers. So if we assume every conversation, every assertion of right or wrong is prefaced or concluded with those two words, for me, I think it will change the way that we understand each other. I think it will be much harder for us to diminish other people and their experiences. And maybe, so I imagine I'm sitting in Sunday school, and what if somebody asks a question and I answer with, for me, here's how I feel the Spirit. For me, so that makes it easier for them to understand it. I can't get to the whole world. I can't get to everybody and teach them these two words. These two words will change your life. But it will be in my TikTok later on today, for sure.
I remember as a older teenager, young adult, having a conversation with Dad, just being really frustrated. I don't remember exactly what was happening, but he tried to tell me, when somebody's talking to you, they're really telling you about themselves.
Yes.
And I didn't fully maybe believe him, definitely didn't fully understand. It was really hard to, he didn't give me these words for me or for, you know, and that is so much easier in my mind. I'm like, this is exactly what Dad was trying to teach me, you know, decades ago, of when somebody's like, you shouldn't do this, you should do this. They're saying what they would do.
Yeah. For me, it worked really well to wait 2 years to have kids.
And he would always say, it's okay to just say, thank you for telling me that, which is a beautiful response when somebody comes at you, when it feels like they're coming at you because they don't say the for me.
Right.
Part. But when you do say that, oh my word, could you imagine sitting in a meeting or in a Sunday school class or a Relief Society class or an Elders Quorum class, and somebody says something maybe a little outside of the mainstream, outside of the center, but included for me.
Right.
It softens it in a way that I think it keeps our hackles down a little bit. We're less likely to be reactive.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes when you have thoughts or beliefs that are outside, they're a little bit more nuanced. Uh-huh. I'm trying to think of a word that's less triggery than sometimes nuance can be triggery word in a orthodoxy religion. We treat people as they're expendable by pushing them out. You conform, you do it this way, or we don't need you,
right.
But we really do need, you know, we talk in our faith, and I think in all Christian faith traditions talk about being the body of Christ.
Right.
We don't need a million arms.
No.
You know, and I heard one lady say, I think I'm the stomach acid. I help digest things. And I was like, that's beautiful.
That's great.
We need all the things.
somebody's got to be the armpit. And
somebody's got to be the armpit. And we could take turns. It don't have right. to always be the armpit.
Every once in a while, I'll be the armpit. Okay, it's my turn. It's my week for the armpit.
Yeah, like earwax, that does serve a purpose.
Yeah, it does. Oh, my goodness. But yeah.
Allowing, I think when we say for me, it allows for the diversity of thought, the diversity of experience, and it makes our circle bigger instead of pushing people to the outside. And this applies in faith traditions, applies in jobs and how we interact with people in any situation.
So I was going to ask, and if you want to answer it, I will ask it, but I was going to ask, so what do we do when we're interacting with somebody who is that person, who the diminisher, the person who's pushing out? But I think you've already answered the question, that you say something like, thank you for sharing that. Because it validates their comment, that it's a valid comment. Thank you for sharing that. As long as you don't say it sarcastically.
Yeah, I actually have a friend who's going through a kind of ugly divorce, and her ex-husband sent a really ranty email, really just kind of lambasting her. And she's like, how do I respond? And I said, you could just say, thank you for telling me that.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, that's really good, right? Because then you're
not
engaging in a way that's argumentative.
Right.
You're also not agreeing with anything that they're saying.
Right.
And so if you're saying it, it is important to not be like, well, thanks for telling me that, you know, like that doesn't come across very nicely, but Dad was good at that. Dad was like, just say, thank you for telling me that.
Yeah. Great lesson.
You know, and he's like, and you can be like, I'm going to now ignore that, but you don't say that part.
So one of the, I was talking to somebody yesterday, had a fun conversation, and, we've had conversations in the past on the podcast about what our gifts and talents are. And that's not the purpose of this episode, but if you know you're good at something, if you're good at diffusing tension, for example, if you know that you're good at connecting with people, if you know that you're good at validating, if you know whatever your gift is, use it on purpose all the time. And so if you have that ranty email or something like that, and a lot of times it's the in-person is where we tense up. So here's something to train yourself to do. When you say, thank you for telling me that, then you can follow that up with, for me, and then give your perspective. Because what that does is it makes it clear, who cares about the other person? We're not worried about changing them, but it makes it clear for us that was your opinion. But for me, I'm doing the best that I can. For me, I'm trying to follow Christ. For me, whatever it is. And I think that
works with our brain, right? That validates to our brain, our own lived experience.
Yes. And we need to remind ourselves that one of the most commonly used commands in the scriptures is remember. I was talking to somebody a few weeks ago. Why is it that I keep slipping into this pattern that I don't like? Well, because you're a human person. This is what we do. The scripture in Mosiah, the natural man is an enemy to God. One of my favorites. We still haven't talked about that. One of these days we will.
We need to talk about that.
So
there's little nuggets in each episode.
So we'll just take one or two sentences each episode. We'll have a compilation. No, I don't have the energy, the desire to go through. We'll just have our own conversation. But I think it's important for us to remind ourselves. One of the first things I do with people, because I think it's so important, is I help them learn how to love, trust, and respect themselves. Because if you love, trust, and respect yourself, the rest comes so much easier than if you think that you're not worth the time, the investment, the energy, the focus, whatever. So this turned into much more coachy Ken than favorite brother Ken.
Family circus cartoon where the dotted line. And
that's like, every single episode. We're all over the place. But I love where we landed, that as we can't change the world. We can't change anybody other than ourselves. But remembering those two words, assuming that they're saying for me, and then we can also either say it or assume it as we're saying things for me, that changes the context in our brain, makes, and I think that'll make a big difference. So, anything you want to add before my cat starts scratching on that microphone and I get this kind of sound?
Love everybody. Be kind.
That's what Allison said the other day. I told her to get out of my house. No, I did not do that.
In a kind way.
And I was super kind. I was super, super loving and happy Mother's Day. Thanks for coming for dinner. Now get out.
Get out.
What should we talk about next week?
We could talk about the natural man.
There was something else that we were talking about.
There was something else.
And let's talk natural man. Let's just do that. We'll talk about the natural man. And I have some thoughts.
I have so many thoughts.
Yay. Maybe it'll be a two-parter. This will be so much fun, depending on how long we go. Stay tuned for part two.
Part two.
Anyways, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you for listening to Chocolate Cake Bites. Please like, share, subscribe, and give us a 5-star rating and review. We'd love to hear your comments and ideas, and you can reach out to me at ken@chocolatecakebites.com. And before you end the day, take a few minutes to consider, who do you know who needs chocolate cake?